like to call this meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 27th, and it is 3:19. And we are in the Grunberg Room today, room 120. Before we begin, I want to introduce my committee aide, Deneen Tuck, and thank Sophia Tenney, our current House Labor and Commerce Secretary, and Doug Bridges, the LIO moderator. This time, I'd like to remind everybody to turn off your cell phones or silence them, your cell phones as well as any other electronic devices. And I gave the wrong room. It's room 124. It is not the Grunberg Room, which I've been in all day. So, present today are Representative Hannon, Representative Reback, Representative Fields, Representative Tallarico, my co-chair, Representative Wong, and I'm Representative Ledoux. We have an excused absence for Representative Stutz, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have two items on the agenda today, House Bill 45 and House Bill 68. Our first item on the agenda is House Bill 45, the extension of the Board of Dental Examiners. This is our first hearing on House Bill 45. And so, Representative Ortiz, would you like to join us at the table and explain your bill? And do you have any staff here who would like to join you at the table? And I also understand that Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor for Legislative Budget and Audit, is here to answer any questions about the audit.
For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska. Thank you, Co-Chairs Ledoux and Wool and committee members for allowing me to present House Bill 45, the Extension of Board of Dental Examiners Bill. House Bill 45 extends the termination date for the Board of Dental Examiners until June 30th, 2027. The Board of Dental Examiners is composed of 9 members, 6 dentists, 2 dental hygienists, and 1 public member. Legislative audit conducted the review of this board and determined that the audit concludes that the board operated in the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants. The board monitored licensees and worked to ensure only qualified individuals practice in Alaska. Furthermore, the board was active in amending regulations to improve the industry in accordance with AS 08030110C7, and we all know what that one is. The board is scheduled to terminate on June 30th, 2019. This bill would extend the board's termination date to June 30th if we pass this bill to June 30th, 2027. The Board of Dental Examiners serves an important role in adopting regulations to carry out the laws governing the practice in dentistry and dental hygiene in Alaska, and the continuation of this board will ensure that high standards of dental care are offered throughout the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Do we have any questions for Representative Ortiz? Representative Fields.
Thanks. Sorry, this question may seem through the chair, this question may seem a little out of left field, but as I recall, back when the tribal health system implemented and expanded the DHAT, Dental Health Aid Therapist Program, there was kind of maybe some debate within the dental community about the right way to regulate that program. Is that something that the Board of Dental Examiners oversees, and what is their current take on the DHAT program and provision of dental care in tribal settings that are a little different from kind of a traditional urban setting? And I recognize, if I had thought of this in advance, I would have let you know I was going to ask about, because I recognize it's kind of obscure.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I fully admit that I'm unable at this time to answer that question. However, perhaps, Chris Curtis, do you have anything to add on that particular?
Just the board chair is on the phone. You have the board chair.
So the board chair is on the phone.
Go ahead.
Did you hear the question?
There's David Nielsen from the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners. Is that who we are talking about, Mr. Artes, Representative Artes?
That's my understanding.
Yes.
Mr.
Dr. Nielsen, are you asking a question for Representative Fields is asking a question, is that right?
Yes. And so, Mr. Nielsen, do you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us who you're affiliated with, just to keep everything nice and clean for our recorder?
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Ledoux. My name is David Nielsen. I am currently the chair of the Alaska State Board of Dental Examiners. And through the chair, I think Representative Fields asked a question about the dental health aid therapist and how we, you know, I can't speak for the entire board on this particular subject, but I can just briefly state that the model seems to be working well in its current form, and actually, ironically, some of the issues that were brought forward prior to this, when they were first coming online, was there were some issues with them not being licensed by the state. But in what it's turned out is they're supervised very well by the dentist that they work under, and it's been working really well. So the fact that they're not licensed by the state has actually allowed them to stay in the villages and in the clinics where they're serving their population the best, and it's working out for both parties very well.
Great, thank you
so
much.
From everything I've heard.
Hey.
So that tension that was in the beginning is probably 10 more years ago. That has pretty much dissipated.
Okay, well, great. It's really good to hear that. I was just hearing the other day where someone was presenting evidence that the highest rate of full mouth reconstruction was among Alaska Native youth in rural communities, and it's great to hear that the board, I guess, no longer has an issue with the DHAP program. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if the board ever did. I know,
Mr. Nielsen, you have to identify yourself for our recorder each time you speak, or everything's going to get mixed up.
Dr. Nielsen, through the chair, the issue was, you know, more with the American Dental Association and not so much the dental board. But yeah, I'm happy to report that things seem to be working well.
Thank you. And it's Dr. Nielsen, my apologies. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just want to comment that it's nice to hear the program's working, and it's also nice to hear him say that the lack of a state license has actually helped it work and maybe even added to its success. I'm not sure if I can allow that interpretation, but the lack of a license certainly hasn't hurt the program. Is that correct?
This is Dr. Nielsen again, through the chair. It's best to talk to the tribal entities for that, to get the true impact of their program. And so I can't really speak for them, but from the people that I have talked to that train them, they're happy that the way it works right now is they tend to stay in the villages where they're needed, and if they were licensed, the feeling may be that they'd tend to move to a place where they weren't needed as much, say a higher population area.
Thank you.
We have any further questions for either the bill sponsor, for legislative budget and audit, or for Dr. David Nielsen? All right, seeing and hearing Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'd like to actually have some questions for legislative budget and audit.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm the state legislative auditor.
Thank you. Through the chair. Thank you, Ms. Curtis, for being here with us. And you drew my attention to page 7 of the unaudited expenditures. And it looks like this board highly varies from year to year in licensing fees. And so it looks like almost every other year we run a deficit. And I presume that's because it must be that most licensures are for 2 years at a time.
Through the chair, the biennial licensing cycle, you'll find that with all occupational boards. So you'll see the revenues fluctuate every other year.
Representative Hannon, follow up.
And since I'm new to the legislature and looking at the budgets, how do we you didn't have any flags of saying this was a bad practice, but I presume at the end of the fiscal year, the money that they have in excess, they've accrued through licensure, when it's a surplus, rolls into the general fund, and then the next year it shows that they run a deficit. Is that common with our boards?
And Ms. Curtis, could you identify yourself for the record each
Certainly.
Time to make things easier for our recorder?
Yes, for the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. Yes, there is a statute that says that board fees must be set at a level that covers board costs. That is not done on an annual basis. It's reviewed on every other year. I have heard testimony that there's a statute that allows them to carry forward balances. I don't know if it's that that formal. They do track their deficits and their surpluses. It can go years in a deficit or years in a surplus, and they try to tweak those fees every other year so they can approximate the cost of the occupation.
Questions on another part of the audit.
Go ahead, Representative
Hannon. Thank you. You did make two findings and two recommendations about regulatory authority, and the one that especially drew my concern was recommendation two, that right now when you identify that two licensed dentists had their prescription authority revoked by the board during the audit authority, but there was no notification to the Board of Pharmacy or Drug Enforcement that those dentists could no longer prescribe. Do you know if action has been taken to meet that audit recommendation you've made, which sent lots of alarms off in a time when we spent a lot of time talking about opioid crisis, and dentists used to be sort of one of the reference points of overprescribing, and so you don't say that directly, but that's where my thinking went.
Through the chair, this is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. Typically, I go through the audit, so maybe I should go through and answer any other questions as well.
Okay.
So we do have two recommendations in the audit. The first one is a recommendation to the board president to correct regulation error. So there was a 2016 regulation change. It resulted in one regulation referencing a repealed regulation, an easy administrative fix. The second one, like you mentioned, is a recommendation for the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, DCBPL. I'm sure you'll hear that acronym quite a bit in this committee. That division's chief investigator, in consultation with the board, to ensure the appropriate entities are notified when a licensee's prescription authority is suspended, revoked, or surrendered. So during our audit period, which is approximately 3 years, we did find two dentists that had their prescription authority revoked or surrendered, and the Board of Pharmacy and the federal DEA were not notified because there were no procedures that required notification. You'll also hear this when I come to testify about the Board of Nursing. It's the same issue on the Board of Nursing. So we do make this recommendation that they develop procedures. On page 19 of the audit is the department's response. They do state that they have implemented a policy to ensure that those entities are notified. So from their perspective, the recommendation is addressed. The board's response to the audit, I believe it's on page 21, and they agree with both recommendations and agree to take corrective action. And also, typically, when I go through an audit, I also direct your attention to page 6, which is the schedule of licensing activity. So just to put this on the record, as of January 2018, there were 2,399 active licensees. So you can see that this board is, it has quite a few licensees, again, covering dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The number of active license, 2,399. I see you list dental hygienist, and that's 641. At the bottom, hygienist, local anesthetic agent. Is that, can one person be both of those categories? In other words, a hygienist in the 641 can also get an additional licensing for local anesthetic, for example.
This is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor, through the chair. That is my understanding, and the board chair may be able to confirm that.
Dr. Nielsen, did you hear the question?
Yeah, this is Dr. David Nielsen through the chair. That is correct that a hygienist on their license can have a local anesthetic permit or endorsement on that license. So, yes, one person can have both. In fact, one person will always have both.
Do you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess the my comment is the 2,399 number is not licensees necessarily, but it's a license with an endorsement, mm-hmm. which is, an endorsement is counting as a active. Anyhow.
Yeah, this is Dave Nielsen through the chair. I'm not sure how the audit is done exactly as far as a separate license, but it is a separate permitting process.
Right.
So it's not a separate person.
Right.
But it is a different process.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any further questions for Ms. Curtis and or Dr. Nielsen? Or we also have Fred Paraday, legislative liaison for the department, and he's also here to answer questions about this bill.
I have one question for Mr. Paraday, if we could invite him.
Okay. Mr. Paraday? Go ahead, Representative Henn.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Paraday, the fiscal note for this shows $33,000 for travel for the board to conduct its work. And I know that in most of the department budgets, 50% reductions in travel were taken. Do you know if this is a 50% reduction in the travel for that board to conduct its work?
Madam Chairman, through the chair, to Representative Hannah, my name is Fred Paraday. I'm Senior Advisor, Legislative Liaison in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And the answer to the representative's question is no, the 50% reduction has not been taken. That cut is given to us as a general cut across the department, and we have some discretion to balance it when we look further at it down the road. But this reflects the current practice and travel requirements of the board.
Thank you.
Any further questions for anyone right now? All right. Seeing or hearing no questions, we have noticed public testimony for this bill. I am therefore going to open public testimony. I see that Dr. Nielsen was registered to give testimony, not to answer questions, but he got roped into that. So, Dr. Nielsen, do you want to testify?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It's David Nielsen. I'm from Anchorage, current chair of the Board of Dental Examiners, and I do have a brief statement, and then if there's any more questions, I'm happy to answer. So the Dental Board basically serves as a vital role in the regulation of dentistry while always keeping the health and welfare of Alaskan citizens in mind. Licensing, permitting, certification, and disciplinary action when appropriate is a cornerstone of what the public should expect from a state government if they have confidence in their health care providers. Personally, I have enjoyed the challenge to serve and appreciate the opportunity to continue fulfilling our purpose. I'm in support of moving HB 45, and if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer.
Do we have any questions? So is there any way, thank you very much, Dr. Nielsen. Doesn't look like there are any more questions for you. So it looks.
Gabrielle's there.
He always asks.
It looks like we do have another question for Dr. Nielsen. Go ahead, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Dr. Nielsen, through the chair, The previous board president, Paul Silveria, wrote a letter in response to the audit regarding the finding about dentists who lost their pharmacy rights in a notification, and it said it was going to be discussed at the December 7th, 2018 board meeting. Were you at that meeting, and was that topic addressed by the board in December?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hammond. From what I recall, I was at the December meeting, and that, you know, I can't be honest and say that it was discussed. The only thing I know is our licensing examiner has told me that it's being taken care of, and that we will definitely report to the pharmacy board of anyone that has lost their prescription privileges. And we also have a meeting coming up on the 15th of April where I will reconfirm that. Plus, we're adding in a regulation that was, it kind of got, I don't know what happened to it, but we actually voted to pass this regulation that requires the signing up to the PDMP of all of our dentists with DEA numbers. And somehow that got sidetracked in regulations somewhere. It got dropped. And so we're adding that back in as soon as possible and making sure everybody signed up. And I know the department is working on a module that will kind of help track our prescription practices and everything like that. So it's definitely on track to get to where it needs to be. And I will make sure that happens on the 15th. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest in following up with that. Thank you, through the chair.
Any further questions for Dr. Nielsen? Then is there anybody else online or in this room that would like to testify on this bill? So seeing or hearing no one wanting to testify, I am going to close public testimony. Do we have any committee questions? Is there any committee discussion? Well, then, if anyone has any amendments, they should be in my office no later than 5 p.m. Friday, March 29th, and it is my intent to bring this bill back on Monday, April 1st. So, the next item on the agenda, thank you, everybody. The next item on the agenda is House Bill 68, Labor Standards, Safety, Worker Compensation. This is our first hearing on House Bill 68. We have with us Gray Mitchell, Director of Workers' Compensation, and Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, here to present the bill. And we also have Terry Gales, Division of Labor Standards and Safety, online and available for questions. And we have noticed public testimony today. So, Representative Munoz, do you want to start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present House Bill 68. Thank you also, Co-Chair Wool, for hearing the bill and members of the committee. I'm Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I'm here with the Director of Workers' Compensation, Gray Mitchell, and online, as you said, we have Tari Gales, Deputy Director of the Division of Labor Standards and Safety. The bill before you, House Bill 68, proposes to combine two divisions of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the divisions of Workers' Comp and the Division of Labor Standards and Safety. The Division of Labor Standards and Safety is focused primarily on workplace accidents and enforcing laws related to workplace safety. They oversee wage and hour issues, mechanical inspections, and the Alaska OSHA program. Alaska workers' compensation is focused on the efficient administration of benefits to injured workers and enforcing laws related to the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. The missions of these two divisions is very complementary. It's very much like two parts of a whole. As I said, one division works primarily to prevent accidents, while the other division works to provide an efficient system of benefits for injured workers. The divisions have historically worked together, and this bill is expected to further increase the opportunities to remove silos and capitalize on efficiencies through a unified management structure. You know, we hear about the term remove silos often, and I will say when Dr. Tamika Ledbetter came into office when she was first appointed in early December, one of the first things she directed the management of all the divisions to do was to look at ways to collaborate between divisions to increase.
Representative, you know, what do you mean by remove silos?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying. And you know, what does that mean? Because we hear it a lot. And
I think of silos as something on a farm.
Right. And that's why I wanted to clarify that. So what does that mean? It means, you know, how do we collaborate across divisions to really enhance the services for the Alaskan public? And an example of that, for instance, with the Job Center Network, she directed the Job Center Network to work closely with AvTech, because AvTech, of course, is our premier training facility, state training facility in the state. So it makes sense that the employees at the job centers are aware of what's happening at AvTech and vice versa. So in that vein, the divisions of workers' comp and the divisions of labor standards and safety have a lot of synergies between the two divisions. We are very cognizant of the issues that each division, the responsibilities of each division, and there is no intent to change any of the missions or the work of the particular divisions. The merger aims to take advantage of position vacancies to explore opportunities to share duties between the divisions where it makes sense and where we can streamline processes. The changes are reflected in the fiscal notes, and Director Mitchell will walk you through the fiscal notes as well as the analysis of the bill after I conclude. So we see this as an opportunity to consolidate and share administrative duties between the two divisions where it makes sense. This effort is not expected to happen overnight. It will be very carefully developed over time, and we're already working to make, you know, this synergy and this combination of divisions successful. The bill does not propose to change, again, the functions of the Division of Labor Standards and Safety or the functions of workers' compensation. It's all about establishing a structure that creates maximum opportunities to share resources and get the work done more efficiently. Madam Chair, Director Mitchell will walk you through the fiscal notes and the analysis of the bill.
Thank you. And before, I have one question at this point. So is OSHA under workers' compensation or labor standards and safety?
Yes, Madam Chair. The Alaska OSHA program is implemented through the Division of Labor Standards and Safety.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you. My name is Gray Mitchell. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. I wanted to start by walking you through the sectional analysis, which can be a little bit dreary, but and so please stop me if I'm boring you. Section 1 through 6 are purely name changes from the Labor Standards and Safety Division to the new name of the division, which would be Worker Safety and Compensation. So everywhere where Labor Standards and Safety appears in one of these statutes referenced in the sections, the name changes is adjusted. And so in Section 1, you'll see the name change on page 1 at lines 7 through 8. For Section 2, which starts at line 11 of page 1, you'll see the name change at line 12 and 13. For Section 3, again, page 2 starts at line 10, goes to line 19. The changes referenced from line 11 through 14 of page 2. Section 4, you'll see at page 2, line 20, through page 3, line 6. And the change, again, is on page 2, lines 24 through 25. Am I doing okay or just continue?
So far, so good.
All right. Section 5 is page 3, line 7 through 17. Again, a simple name change. You'll see the change at page 3, lines 13 through 14. Section 6 is page 3, line 18 through page 4, line 4. And the change there is at page 3, line 29. Again, just a name change. Section 7 is a little bit different, so we've got some excitement here. This section repeals and reenacts AS 2310075 to establish the Division of Workers' Safety and Compensation and provide a list of the statutes which the division will administer. The statutes will be administered by the new Workers' Safety and Compensation Division, or the same statutes that are administered by Labor Standards and Safety and Workers' Compensation. So this section simply combines the two statutes that were administered by each division into one section. Section 8 is at page 4, lines 10 through 29. And this section would amend AS 23.10.080, which is powers and duties of the division, by adding a paragraph to incorporate the workers' compensation duties that the new division would administer. All of the existing duties are the duties of labor standards and safety now, so we're just adding in the duties for workers' compensation and combining it under one new name, the Division of Workers' Safety and Compensation. Sections 9 through 14, just like sections 1 through 6, are purely name changes, except in this case, we're going from the Division of Workers' Compensation to the new Division of Workers' Safety and Compensation. And 1 through 6, we were going from Division of Labor Standards and Safety to the new division name. So are we still doing good? Should I continue on? Okay. Section 9 is
that... interrupt you if you have any, we have any questions.
Okay. Section 9 is at page 4, line 30, through page 5, line 9. And you'll notice the name change there from the Division of Workers' Compensation to adding the new word safety there at page 5 of line 6, or line 6 of page 5, sorry. Section 10 is the same thing, name change. It's page 5, lines 10 through 22, and you'll see the change there at line 18 of page 5. Section 11 is page 5, lines 23 through 25. And the change is identified at page 5, line 24 to 25. Again, just adding the word safety to change the name of the division. Section 12 is at page 5, lines 26 through 28. And you'll see the change there at line 27. Again, just the name change. Section 13 is page 5, lines 29 through 31. And you'll see the name change there at lines 30 through 31 at page 5. Section 14 is on page 6, lines 1 through 7. And again, the name change from the Division of Workers' Compensation to the new Division of Workers' Safety and Compensation is at page 6, line 3. Section 15 is page 6, line 8. This repeals Alaska Statute 23.30.002, which is the statute that previously or does currently establish the Division of Workers' Compensation and the authority for the commissioner to appoint the director. And this is restated under Section 7 of the bill and incorporates it under the new joint division name. Section 16 is a transitional position on codified law, just basically stating that ongoing matters under either Division of Workers' Compensation or the Labor Standards and Safety Division would continue under the new Workers' Safety and Compensation Division. And then Section 17, page 6, line 20, establishes the July 1st, 2019 proposed effective date.
So it seems like this, we've got basically six pages of name changes. But it seems like this bill does something more substantive than name changes, I think. So what's it actually going to do?
I think, Madam Chair, the fiscal note speaks to the specific changes, and Director Gray was going to walk us through the fiscal note.
Okay.
Well, and if I might add to that, Madam Chairwoman, the main purpose here is, and what this bill is doing, is combining two divisions that are currently under separate administrations. They're theoretically, in their own pockets or silos, however you want to look at that, and integrating them so that administration can be integrated, enforcement actions can be better coordinated. We can look at potential savings for combining space, technology, all of the aspects that are currently sort of divided between the two divisions will be combined, and our hope is that that would produce a more efficient delivery of service to the public. And so we don't intend, that's why it doesn't look like there's really anything substantive going on, because we're not trying to change any of the statutory authorities. We're not changing any missions. We're just trying to combine things and look for better, more efficient ways to do business.
So I see Representative Hannon has her hand up.
Thank
and
you.
And then Representative Wall, and then Representative Fields.
Although I can wait till after fiscal note. Thank you.
Through the chair, and some of this will go to fiscal note, but since there is the specific, I think it's Section 15, where it does away with the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, my question is that position currently filled? And is that the only job done away with? And I was trying to read quickly through the compensation board to see whether that director specifies some role in the board, because there is a decision made about which one's going away and which one stays, and I don't know the downstream effect of that. So I guess the simplest question is the person who is that position filled? Do they know that their job would be done away with, and are they a political appointee, or are they a classified personnel? That's my simple question.
I can take it. Okay. This is Gray Mitchell, Director of Workers' Compensation. Representative Hannan through the chair. The Section 15 repeals the authority to appoint a director by the commissioner, and the statute that establishes the Division of Workers' Compensation, but it moves those provisions under Section 7 of the bill, and so that authority just moves under a statutory authority that creates not only the Division of Labor Standards and Safety, but also the Division of Workers' Compensation, and combined into the Workers' Safety and Compensation Division, which would be the new division, and that director would move over there as well, which is my position. And so there isn't a current plan to eliminate either director positions, the Director of Workers' Compensation or the Deputy Director position in Labor Standards and Safety. And so we do have some proposed savings and positions that we'll discuss in the fiscal note, but that position is not one of them.
If I can just add a little clarity, Madam Chair. The Director of Labor Standards and Safety is an unfilled position. The Deputy Director is the manager of Labor Standards and Safety and does all of the day-to-day authority decision making that happens in that division, and it's not our intent to change that. It's the current deputy director, who's online and available for questions, will continue in that role, and the director of the combined division would be more on the budget issues and policy and kind of overseeing both functions.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question was pretty much the same. In other words, it says here there's not going to be a force reduction, at least initially, but obviously the director, if you have two divisions and you merge them, you only need one director, but it sounds like one of them isn't filled anyway. So, and I guess the future savings and efficiencies will be realized as time goes on and through attrition or there will be some labor savings at some point, I would imagine, or mm-hmm. right?
There is, and they're identified in the fiscal note, and perhaps that is a good segue to go through the fiscal note, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yep. So there's two fiscal notes. The first fiscal note is the easiest one, and this is for it's fiscal note number one. It's for the workers' compensation appropriation, and there's no fiscal impact expected to the Division of Workers' Compensation. There will be some regulatory changes that will be necessary because the Division of Workers' Compensation is identified several places in the workers' compensation regulations, but we'll incorporate that into a future regs package, and we don't anticipate any fiscal impact associated with that. Fiscal note number two is the Labor Standards and Safety Division fiscal note. And this one has a proposed savings of $283,000. We are not laying any positions off. There's no one being put in that position. There's two positions that we're intending to delete, but neither position will be filled at the time that the deletion would happen. One of the positions, the person is retiring, and the other one is just vacant.
So I'm confused. If nobody's being laid off, where did the savings come from? Just not filling the position?
Madam Chair, it would result in a reduction to the department and in general fund support to the department, commensurate with the cost of those positions.
Thank you.
Right. And so the positions that are planned to be eliminated through the bill is currently there's a chief for the Alaska Occupational Safety and Health program, and then there's also an assistant chief that's over the enforcement side of the program, an assistant chief that's over the consultation and training side of the program. The department has gone through sort of these management flattening efforts, and then, you know, it reestablishes itself somehow, and then it flattens. And so this would be an effort, again, to flatten the management structure by eliminating a position in middle management and having the deputy director position take a greater role in managing the occupational safety and health program overall.
And it looks like Representative Fields wants to pop in with a question.
Thanks. Through the chair, is the occupational safety and health chief position a partially exempt or fully exempt position?
Through the chair, Gray Mitchell, no. It's a classified position. Anything else on that one? Okay. The other position that would be affected is a vacant office assistant two position in the Labor Standards and Safety Division, and the idea is that we would use an office assistant to position in the Workers' Compensation Division to assist and assume the roles of that position. The office that currently has these two office assistant positions is in Fairbanks. There's not a tremendous amount of workload there, and we think that we can handle the workload effectively with just one position sharing the duties between the two divisions, which would end up being one division, of course, in the proposal. So that saves the occupational safety and health chief position is the most significant position. That's a range 23. The office assistant two position is a range two position. There are two other efficiencies that are planned. One is to reclassify the Division of Labor Standards and Safety Director position to the Deputy Director position. The Director position is at a range 27, and the Deputy Director position is at a range 25. So there's a savings of about $10,000 per year associated with that adjustment. The other change is that currently each division has its own administrative officer two position, and this is the position that handles all of the expenditure tracking, budgeting, personnel issues, all those kind of administrative functions. And when one of those position leaves in either division now, they do not have a backup. They're sort of in a class of one. And so by taking this one position in the Labor Standards and Safety Division and reclassifying it to an admin officer one, and then having the admin officer two in workers' comp, which is the more senior person right now, coordinate and supervise that position in Labor Standards and Safety, we believe we'll be able to build an administrative team that will be stronger, even though we'll have one position that's a slightly lower range for the combined division than we have with these two positions separately. And the reason, again, is that when you have a vacancy, it really creates a massive hole for that division, and it takes a few months, several months, to sort of get the division back on track after we have a vacancy like that. So by doing this, we would build a career path for the administrative officer one, and then we would create this structure where you would always have somebody who knew kind of, you know, what was going on in both divisions.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Would it be possible to effectively cross-train both those positions so you could have that kind of flexibility even with two separate divisions? I mean, is there a legal barrier to doing that?
There's not, through the chair, Representative Fields. There's
and
not.
Please identify yourself.
Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation, through the chair, Representative Fields. There's not really a legal restriction against doing that. You know, it's this silo issue that crops up. You know, when you have two separate divisions that are operating under separate leadership, there's just this automatic resistance. It's like if one of the representatives here wanted to combine, you know, staff efforts with another representative, there would be, you know, just the allegiances or the, you know, how you prioritize your work would be somewhat questionable. And so combining this in a way where you have one of these administrative positions supervising the other eliminates that problem and creates the kind of, you know, coordination that we're looking for that's hopefully will create better service delivery.
We have any further questions? Representative Fields.
Yeah, I guess I just have some general questions. Thank you. Through the chair, just getting a sense of the relative size of the different divisions, if you all remember offhand, could you give us a estimate of the number of staff per division? I think there are 9 divisions roughly in the department. And if you don't have those numbers on hand, I guess we could just talk about the next hearing. Or maybe starting out, how many are in Labor Standards and Safety?
Madam Chair, total in the department.
I'm sorry,
Deputy Commissioner Kathy Munoz, Department of Labor. A total in the department, we have approximately 700 positions, and specific to workers' comp, Director?
Yes, Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation, through the Chair, Representative Fields. We have 51 positions in the Workers' Compensation Division, and I believe Labor Standards and Safety has 89.
Okay.
Follow-up?
Thank you. Follow-up. Do you recall offhand how many are in Commissioner, ASD, AWIB, Workers' Compensation Appeals, some of the other divisions? Or if you don't have them on hand, that's fine. I was just curious in terms of scale.
I certainly will get that number for you. We don't have the specific numbers right at our fingertips, but I certainly will get that number to you right away.
Thanks, Paul.
Madam Chair. And I'll provide it to the chairwoman.
And just to add to that, Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation, through the chair, there are divisions that are larger, The Division of Employment and Training Services is, I don't know, it's the largest division in the department. And I want to say it's got 300 to 400 employees. And the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation is a similar size to what we're proposing here. It would have, you know, 100 plus employees. And so does that help with providing some scale?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of look at them in relationship to one another, if I could ask a follow-up. Could you talk about currently within Labor Standards and Safety and currently within ACOSH, how many subdivisions or components are within each of those divisions, and just real quickly, what do they do?
Okay.
Well, within the Labor Standards and Safety, we have...
You want
to... I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner. In the Division of Labor Standards and Safety, there's the Alaska OSHA program, mechanical inspections, and wage and hour. And we have online Deputy Director Gales, and he could speak specifically to the number of individuals in each of those divisions if that information would be helpful to you.
And to add to that, this is Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation. The sections within workers' compensation include adjudications, the Fisherman's Fund, the Benefits Guarantee Fund, the Second Injury Fund, the Special Investigation Unit, and the Administrative Unit. And the reemployment benefits section. Sorry about that. And off the top of my head.
So, did you want to hear from Deputy Director Gayongs, Representative Fayongs?
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Gayongs.
This is Terry Gales, Deputy Director of Labor Standards and Safety. Yes, ma'am.
And did you hear Representative Fayongs' question?
I did not.
You want to repeat that, Representative Fayongs?
Sure. Through the chair, I had asked just for a quick outline of the sections within each division, and Deputy Commissioner Munoz had suggested maybe giving the number of staff within each section of Labor Standards and Safety.
Through the chair, this is Deputy Director Gales, Labor Standards and Safety. There are 20 in wage and hour, approximately 20 in mechanical inspection, and about 40 in ACOSH.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
And of the 40 in ACOSH, are they somewhat evenly divided between consultation and enforcement, or how does that break down?
It's not exactly even. There's a couple more safety folks in enforcement than there are in consultation. I'm not exactly 100% sure on the exact number, but it may be around, I think, two additional, one additional safety and one additional industrial hygienist within enforcement.
Follow up.
Yes, Mr. Gayles, and please identify yourself for the record when you speak. Thank you.
I was actually going to ask a follow-up, Madam Chairwoman of Director Mitchell, if that's okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell, having worked with you, I know you work very hard. Not to get too personal, but how many hours a week do you work, or have you worked in general as a division director over the years?
Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation, through the chair. It varies. I would say when the legislature is in session, it could be, you know, 60, 70 hours a week, you know, and when the legislature's not in session, you know, probably 50 hours a week or so.
And follow up is, to the best of your knowledge, has there been a similar workload for the Labor Standards and Safety Director, roughly speaking?
Through the chair, I would say yes.
Okay. Thank you. I guess, Madam Chairwoman, I would say in closing, I would certainly validate that Director Mitchell works beyond normal office hours, and so have other division directors in the affected divisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions for either Ms. Munoz, Mr. Mitchell, or Mr. Gales? Well, I have noticed this for public testimony, so I will now open public testimony. Do we have anybody either online or in the audience who would like to testify? Please identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're connected.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Etheridge, I'm with the Alaska AFL-CIO. And we do have a concern with this merger, is that what our concern is, and we've seen it in the past, where you combine two departments or two divisions, that one kind of gets left behind a little bit. And when you start pulling people out of this one to put them over in that one, that it starts to slip, and both of these divisions are very important to the working people of the state. And that's what our concern is that there might be some kind of slippage along the line, and that's our only concern at this point.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Etheridge? Seeing none, thank you very much for your, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux, through the chair. Mr. Etheridge, can you expand upon that? I mean, are you more concerned about workers' compensation not being adhered to, or labor's, and I know it's early on in the proposal and hard to visualize, but I guess when I hear that it is the director of workers' comp who still would remain in the aftermath, I assume that he's up to task on those. So I don't know if you can project out where your concerns would lie, because the underlying concern is shared. Anytime you compress things, the expectation is your goal is efficiency, but maybe something doesn't get done.
Madam Chair, Don Etheridge, through the chair to Representative Hanna. Our concern is that either department, either division gets left behind. Right now we have concerns in labor standards and safety about inspections and not being done, because they are shorthanded from what we look at, that when we request inspections, that some of our guys complain that it takes a while to get there. In workers' comp, that's a very important division to us also. But if either one of them starts slipping a little bit, we have a concern with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Etheridge? Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Well, I'm not going to close public testimony, but we're going to set this bill aside until some further meeting. And is there any committee discussion? Yes, Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Mr. Etheridge's comments and certainly take those into consideration. But I also... From previous experience, and I want to talk about my personal experience, Madam Chair, but from previous experience I've had, there's probably an opportunity here to make incredible improvements to any type of state safety program by having a closer merger, and particularly with workers' compensation and a safety department. The trend has certainly been, and my personal experience in the private sector, is, years ago, there used to be a separation between a safety director and the compensated injuries. Those were handled by an administrative person. I guess the best way to put it, in my simplest term, is a bean counter, and the safety guy was over here. People came to the realization that the details of compensated injuries, the analysis that you could do, and combining that and having your safety people directly connected to that, was the best way to develop a far better safety culture. and develop programs that improved the safety of all of the workers on site. And I think that's not just a trend now, but you'll hear the term safety culture. And the opportunity here to make sure that that data and that analysis is directly connected to the safety people, and having that combination can make incredible improvements to an entire safety culture. On a statewide basis, it might be a little more difficult than a smaller company, but it's certainly a doable thing. So even though I do appreciate the comments, I think there might also be an opportunity here to actually improve our safety standards as a whole by not having that line drawn between two divisions and having that combination put together. And thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. That's just been my experience, which I would like everyone to at least consider. Thank you.
Thank you. Our Representative Fields and then Representative Wall.
I agree with the premise that these divisions are complementary, as Deputy Commissioner Munoz said. I guess one thing that concerns me is the loss of the ACOS chief. I think that's more of a technical kind of professional position than the Deputy Commissioner position, which is more of a managerial and a policy position. And I would hate to lose permanently that ability to ensure that, as my colleague said, those ACOSH functions are united. Because I just, having worked in the department, I don't see a deputy director position or really any political position replacing that professional expertise and capacity, particularly at a time when some years back, actually not too long ago, the federal government cited us for some inadequacies in our OSH program, and we're rebuilding after that. But that was a pretty serious incident, and I would hate to have us with inadequate ACOSH capacity to keep recovering from that incident. Something that I am interested in thinking about is just the management workload. I know that these division directors are workhorses, and I mean, Division Director Mitchell's right. There is a lot of work running workers' comp, and there's a lot of work running labor standards and safety. And one thing I think about is just, is there, you know, can one person do the job for these departments or these divisions? Were they united? Because they're both really important. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Thank you. Any other comments, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was going to echo some of what Representative Field says, in that this the savings and efficiencies are projected, I guess. Some of the positions aren't filled, so they're currently not filled. Director Mitchell said he's working 50 hours a week or 70 during session, and I had the same thought. If that two divisions now has one director, that's an increase in workload. I guess there's deputy directors, and I don't know, it sounded like one of them wasn't filled currently as well. I have to touch base again with the testifiers, which we don't have to do today necessarily, but I guess without there was a couple positions you're losing, it looked like, two positions. So bringing 130 people or 80 and 50 or whatever the numbers were together and losing a admin assistant and a director, I guess. So I hope the projected efficiencies and savings will be there. And, you know, I'd almost want to come back to this in some time and say, okay, let's reevaluate this and where are we? Is it better and more streamlined, more efficient, or is it just more work? And instead of two distinct divisions doing distinct things, is it blurry at all? And I don't know how that's going to pan out, but maybe some evaluation process would be needed.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. It now occurs to me that I am curious as to whether our Department of Labor and these divisions have parallels in the federal government, because frequently find that we develop our agency structure in response to federal bureaucracy that we have to respond to, and along the thinking of Representative Del Riccio, I thought, you know, if you know where you're making your injuries, then preventing them is a cheaper outcome, and that's better and super efficient. But if in the end what you have is a guy whose job was 70 hours a week now having to do 100 hours a week, we probably don't have a better efficient outcome, and I don't know how much of either of those divisions' work is directed by federal mandates that may have already siloed them off, and it's more sort of a global question, and since we'll come back to it, I'm not asking for the agency to come back to that, but it may be something for them to think about, because I do see that the goal to be more efficient, that you're informing your safety practices to make sure if it's an area that repeatedly produces working compensation claims, then it's an area that we need to improve our safety standards and goals for. But if all we do is produce more work for an administrative person who can never get that time to make those changes, then we haven't saved anything in the long run. But the mantra of the administration has been efficiency, and I've been waiting to see where we're going to do some compression to try and develop efficiency. So I laud the goal, but it's always in the details of does it come out in reality as we thought it would on paper.
Thank you. Any further comment? Well, I actually have a question for either Mr. Mitchell or Representative Munoz or maybe Tariq Gayoms, whoever wants to take a shot at it. So Mr. Gayoms is the deputy director. Previously, has there been both a director and a deputy director? How long has the position of director been not filled? And when there was a director, was there also a deputy director?
Madam Chair, Greg Mitchell, Director, Division of Workers' Compensation. No, the deputy director position that is on the books now what is the same position that the director held in the past. There wasn't a deputy director position. I believe in anticipation for this proposed merger, the person who was appointed to head up the Division of Labor Standards and Safety was appointed as a deputy director to avoid having to adjust, make an adjustment at the in the future. And so there isn't an extra position that we're not going to fill, or, you know, we'd still have both heads of each division that have historically existed in place.
So does that mean that when we were talking about the workload of the Director of Workers' Compensation, and you know that if he then was the Director of Labor Standards and Safety, I mean, it would look like you'd be like doubling the workload. But does that mean that you'd still have the Deputy Director of Labor Standards and Safety, who really right now is acting as the director doing that work, so that you wouldn't be working, assuming that you remain in place, you know, like 100 hours a week?
Okay. Madam Chair, Gray Mitchell, Director of Workers' Compensation. That's exactly right. The a sneak peek of what we're thinking about would be to establish an operational managerial control over all of the enforcement functions within the combined divisions. Primarily, that's currently in labor standards and safety, so wage and hour, mechanical inspection, occupational safety and health. Added to that would be the special investigation unit in workers' compensation, and the deputy director would focus on operational management of those enforcement inspection type related functions. The director position would focus more on the overall administrative issues, mm-hmm. Providing assistance to the deputy director. Of course it would be a team effort. In managing the division as a whole, the director would also focus on the adjudication functions in the Division of Workers' Compensation, benefit programs, those kinds of things, administration. So hopefully that gives you an idea of kind of what we're thinking about. You know, from my perspective, the workload is not necessarily going to change, because there still will be two leaders in place. And in some cases, again, when you have two people who are sort of sharing the load, you can bounce off of each other, and you know, you might actually get to go on vacation and have someone who's there ready to fill in for you in a kind of a full capacity when you're gone. As it is now, you know, you have to try and find someone in the classified service who's willing to sort of, you know, take on an acting role for a, you know, a week or two, and it can be a challenge. So, you know, in some ways, producing this sort of joint leadership team, just like I was talking about with the administrative positions, it creates that unification that overall could provide better service with the combined divisions, and possibly even make it so you could work a little less.
So this may be a very good idea. I'm not sure at this point, but I guess what I'm thinking is that there looks like there is savings of $283,000. But if you didn't used to have the deputy director, instead you had the director, and the deputy director is really functioning as the director, I mean, haven't you? Are you really saving anything by taking away the director position? Are you following? And you look like you're following me, so.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Gray Mitchell, Division of Workers' Compensation. The savings associated with reclassifying the position, the director position, to a deputy director position are fairly minimal. I mean, that makes up about 10,000 of the 283,000. So really, the big part of the savings comes in flattening the management structure in occupational safety and health. Almost 200,000 of the total comes just from that one position alone. So that's where we're really sort of adjusting things. And, you know, it sort of depends on your thought process, whether you think you need a lot of people overseeing a program in order to make it efficient, or if you can streamline things from a management perspective and, you know, we still will have leadership in both of the main programs in occupational safety and health. And if things start to go awry and either of those positions aren't keeping up, then we can make adjustments. And we've done that in the past when the last time we did a streamlining function. And it kind of depends on the people who are in those positions to a degree. And so, for example, we did a management restructuring in 2004, 2005. I used to be the director of labor standards and safety, and it worked for, like 6-7 years. The position that was in charge of the enforcement program, which is really the one that seems to be the most problematic to keep on top of, had no problem, was acing all of the federal reviews for 6 or 7 years. Then, of course, they retired, and we had a new person come in, and they were struggling. And so ultimately, after a couple of years of struggling, we took one of our enforcement positions, and we upgraded them to an assistant to assist with that side of the program. And so, you know, I mean, that same kind of thing could happen in this scenario, or, you know, depending on the people involved, we may be sailing fine for a number of years.
All right, thank you. So, as I said, this bill is going to be held for a bit, and we'll get a chance to percolate. And our next meeting is scheduled on April 1st. The March 29th meeting has been canceled. It is now 4:33, and we are adjourned.